But anyway, I want to thank Martha for giving me the opportunity. I'm sure all of you have noticed the orange buckets. If you want to put them over your head during my testimony, that's okay. I completely understand. But this is our mission project for the year. I think it's a very important one. And hypothetically, I'm going to sort of explain the floods of my life and tie the buckets in and hope we become very successful in our project. A little background history, not a lot about me, but I was actually raised a Baptist. My parents were not great church attenders, but that was the faith I was baptized in and attended most of my growing up years and teen years. After I moved away and left home, I met a gentleman and we got married. And he was a Methodist and belonged to a small Methodist church, much like this in size. And I just loved the Methodist church. They welcomed me. I found a home. So I switched and joined the Methodist church. My marriage did not last, but it produced two wonderful children, and I'm thankful for that. And my ex-husband and I have remained wonderful friends over the years, and I stayed a member of that church after we divorced, and my children were brought up in that church. Needless to say, he didn't come to church there anymore. But this is not really about that. It's just kind of telling you how I got involved with the Methodist church. I'm going to speak to you very openly and honestly about the flood of 1990, which was in my life. I was a woman in her 30s. I had a great job. I had a wonderful boyfriend. I had a nice house. I had kids that were hugely successful in school that would make any mother proud. And I was rocking along. I went to church every Sunday. I taught Sunday school to teenagers. I thought I was invincible. I didn't think anything could touch me. My parents were in good health. Shelley and Robbie's great-grandparents, my grandparents, lived 5 minutes from me. They did all the parenting when I was working. They did the school events, the baseball events. I was blessed. Well, just to get high up on that pedestal, you find out you're going to fall. Well, it started in the spring of that year. Shelley had already left her school, and I generally took Robbie to elementary school on my way to the train station. And I was just coming down the street in front of the school, going the speed limit, and this young man on the sidewalk decided he was going to turn around and run. Well, he ran as hard as he could into my car door, which catapulted him up into my windshield, which catapulted him out into the road in front of him. Well, if any of you ever hit a squirrel and sat on the side of the road and cried, I have, it just devastated me. I didn't know how to drive. I didn't know how. It was just devastating. I did not drive for 6 weeks. It took me that long to get back behind the wheel of my car. I was starting to get a little angry with God at this point because I'm going, okay, a child. The child was fine. The child was charged because he ran into my car. I didn't hit him. Well, things rocked along. Life got back to normal. Vacation came up in late June. Jim and the kids and I were going to Daytona and Epcot. Trip went well. It was a glorious vacation. The best one I think we'd ever been on together. And we came back from the beach, and about mid-July, there was something wrong. I knew I had something in my ear. I just assumed it was swimming pool or ocean water or something like that. But it persisted. And so I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to go get it checked out, you know, the ear, nose, and throat doctor. And ironically, the day I was going to the doctor, Jim was leaving to go to Europe, and he didn't want to go, but I said, no, you need to go. It's probably nothing. They'll give me medicine. Well, I went to the ear, nose, and throat doctor, And about halfway through the exam, he said, "How long has your face been numb?" I said, "Well, my face isn't numb." He said, "No, your face is numb on the left side." And he said, "You've lost 80% of your hearing on the left side." I said, "You must be wrong." He said, "Well, no." He said, "I'm going to go check on a few things and the nurse will come and get you." Well, you always know in a doctor's office when they take you in the office and offer you something cold to drink, it's not good news. So he said, "Well, I think you have a tumor." I said, "Oh." And I'm thinking, tumor in my ear, you know, that's what I thought. And so he said, "I'm going to schedule you for a CAT scan." I said, "Okay, that works." Well, at this point, I was starting to get a little kind of losing my faith a little bit, going, "Why me, Lord? Wasn't that child enough? Now you're going to do something like this to me with my children or just barely getting to be teenagers?" But I said, "Okay, I got this." Well, Jim left for Europe. I didn't tell him, but I called on my grouchy old man, Daddy, and he came and took me to the hospital. And then, of course, they come in there after the first round of scans and want to know when my next doctor's appointment is. And I said, "Well, this afternoon." And they say, "Well, that's good." And then you get at the doctor and they call you back and say, "Did you come by yourself?" So my dad went back with me and they explained to me that I still think I have a tumor in my ear at this point. So I said, "Okay, you know, what's the next thing?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to call Emory and a couple of other places and decide where you need to go for your surgery." Well, I'm still thinking I'm having ear surgery at this point. So I go home. He calls that night and says, "I have an appointment for you for the head of neurosurgery at Emory tomorrow." So my grouchy little daddy has to get out and drive me to Emory because there's traffic all the way. I'm having a breakdown. And we get there, and I go back to see Dr. Tindall, and Dr. Tindall starts talking about a 12 or 15-hour surgery. Wow. And I'm going, "On my ear?" And he's going, "Your ear? Why do you think your tumor's in your ear?" He said, "Have you looked at your scans?" I said, "Well, no." But I've actually become a great reader of scans since then. And he said, "Where do you think your tumor is?" So I pointed to this little dark spot. And he said, "That's just the canal to your ear, Sherry." He said, "You see this like white circle over here on your brain stem back there?" I said, "Oh." He said, "That would be your tumor." I said, "Oh, okay." He said, "I'm pretty sure it's benign, but it's pressing on your brain stem. And we'll have to operate. So go home, get your affairs in order. School closed off for Shelly and Robbie. It was August. Go get your wheel done." So, you know, I go home, the world's spinning. Jim's not here to offer me support. On my knees every day, and I keep feeling like God has deserted me. You know, I'm asking for strength, and I don't feel like he's there. Well, I talked to Jim and told him what was going on, and he said he'd be home as soon as possible. Well, the very next night, happened to be Friday night, and Shelly, I was taking Shelly to a New Kids on the Block concert. And went to the concert with all these jumping around teenagers, and when I got home, Jim had flown in from Europe, and he was there when I got home. And he said, "I think we need to take a breath. We need to research options." And you know, this was a God wing. It took me a long time to realize it. But God sent me an answer, and Jim coming home, because we researched it. And I ended up, instead of having open surgery, I ended up having, at that time, very experimental gamma knife radiation, which would arrest the tumor's growth, but I would still have residuals. I would probably have balance problems. My hearing would be completely lost. I would, for a period of time, look like I had a stroke. And all of those things did occur. So you might be asking yourself, "Well, it couldn't get any worse." Well, guess what? It can. I was about 6 weeks out from treatment and starting to look a little bit like I had a stroke and had a degree of balance problems at this point. Kids had started school. My neurosurgeon said, you need to get away. Don't think about your head. So we went to the beach. Jim took me to the beach. He was very different on that trip. He seemed to be tired, and I seemed to have more energy, which in most cases it should have been reversed. And we came back from the beach, and it was October, and he started feeling very sick. And I happened to have an MRI the same day he went to the doctor. And I remember him coming downstairs at Piedmont, and he says, I gotta have a CAT scan this afternoon. They think it's more than just having an upset stomach. Well, the next week he entered the hospital and was diagnosed with end-stage Odell liver cancer, which is like pouring gasoline on a fire. He died 13 days after entering the hospital. So, okay, I'm on my knees again. I'm not getting any answers at this point. I'm mad. I'm left to have to deal with my head problems, not being able to drive, looking like I've had a stroke. Got great parents and grandparents that are trying to help out. So we rolled to Christmas, and my grandmother, who had essentially been there for my children through all their elementary days, went into congestive heart failure on Christmas Eve. So then I'm back at the hospital, which at this point, when I entered hospitals, I would go in the closet and throw up because hospitals all have the same kind of smell. So she battled for 3 months and came home. She got home. And then in April, my mother had a massive heart attack. And at that point, even my minister from church was going, okay, Sherry, that old saying, God can't give you more than you can handle. I was questioning this. I was really struggling. And my mom, my grandmother passed, and my mother survived her heart surgery. All of that took place in 8 months. I was still standing. I couldn't understand the world around me anymore because people would be talking about a broken fingernail or they couldn't find an item at the grocery store. And I thought, what is wrong with you people? My condition was such that I couldn't return back to my job, and financially things were getting a little tough. And in the spring, my dad showed up. My dad was my blood bucket. He showed up, he dusted me off, he wiped my tears, he wrapped his arms around me with all the essentials that are in these buckets. And my parents took me and my children back to their home. When they were planning on moving to the beach, which had been their dream, they quit their dream. They redid their home to accommodate two teenagers and me. They took over tremendous parental duties. My dad did baseball practice. He did football practice. My parents, God-given, and I'm sure this was God's answer to my blood bucket, put us back together, piece by piece. And, you know, I have many friends that say, how did you hang in there and fight so long with your dad? Because he sometimes wasn't the nicest person. And I said, you'll just never understand what the blood bucket meant to me at that time. He saved me and he saved my children along with God. So life continues. I get through, you know, move on. Pick the pieces up. My children graduate, go on to college. They've done wonderfully. But then about 5 years ago, I felt like I was back in that same place again. I was tired. I was going to daddy's every day. It seemed like And then it just got worse. And I had to go back and be there 24/7. So I speak to all of you in here today that when I stepped in the door here, y'all have became my blood bucket. You've dusted me off. You've loved me. You've supported me. You have been there when I needed you. And I can never thank you enough for what y'all have meant into my life. Once again, God and the blood buckets have saved me. And I hope that in some way I do that for some of y'all. Because y'all are my family. And I love you. And just know that your spirit's with me. Like I said, you are my blood bucket right now. And that's kind of hypothetical, I know. And I'm not trying to get, well, I am trying to get a blood bucket. I just mean it in a different sense. You did dry me off. You did support me. You did scrub me. You provided the things I needed in my life at that moment. And I hope everyone that walks in the doors of this church feels that same love and warmth that I do when I walk in here. Thank you very much for allowing me to talk. Love you.